Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Videha. Videha is an Osho disciple since 1980 and is initiated into the Mevlevi Sufi order of Koniha, the Whirling Dervishes. Videha integrates the Sufi path with Osho's vision and has traveled to Mongolia, China, Taiwan, Central Asia and Tibet, where he learned from many teachers. Videha has been leading groups, seminars and meditation retreats all over the world for more than 25 years, uniting the path of love and the path of meditation. Hello, Videha. Welcome to the Love Osho podcast. How are you?
I'm okay. Thank you.
Okay. So I really look forward to this conversation. You have a treasure trove of experience to share, experience you gained by traveling extensively in the East and coming into contact with many different spiritual traditions, from Sufism to Zen and Tibetan Buddhism. And of course, Osho, who is your master and is in a way, he encompasses all of that. So let's start from Osho, and I'd love to hear how you came to know about Osho in the first place.
Very simply, a friend about 43 years ago, I think, she gave me a book, and it was one of the first Osho book published in Italian, The Book of Secrets. And I didn't know anything about Osho, although I already started a little bit into the meditation part, let's say, coming from quite common to many people in that time background, being involved into political and, you know, the student fight and all that stuff. We are talking about the end of the 70s. And then it shifted a little bit from the political involvement more to the individual change, transformation, and this was through Wilhelm Reich, and see how whatever the society is manifesting as its roots in the individual. So that there is the real problem, let's say. So shifting from trying to change the idealistic view of changing the society, seeing that actually have to change the individual. So then it shift a little more on the meditation part, let's say. And then one friend gave me this book from Osho. And I didn't even know the name at the time, Bhagwan Rajneesh. And I opened the book, I start reading here and there. And the moment I start reading, then simply tears come. A lot of tears come. And I felt so touched, and I felt like this is what I was always looking for, and somehow felt, but of course was not able, I didn't have the clarity, of course, to express it. So I felt this immediate connection, very strong, and I felt I have to go and meet this, that time, this writer. So, yeah, and then it took actually maybe a little less than 3 years for me to manage to go to Osho, to go to Pune. And finally, I managed. It was in 1980, because that time, of course, I was very young. I was 23, 24, and still have to do the army service. In that time, you have to. So, but I was very lucky. I didn't do it, actually. I avoided it. Then I simply work to gather the money to buy a ticket and to go to India and to go to Osho. Yeah. So that's how, somehow, from the outside, how it happens.
Yes, that's wonderful. And just for people who don't know, the late 70s were very difficult time in Italy from a political, social point of view. They are called anni di piombo, lead years, where, you know, there were shootings on the street and young people were taking part in opposite factions and literally killing each other. It was really heavy time, etc. So you went from these political ideas or social ideas of changing the world to more inner path, and you came to Novadosho, and then you saved the money, you avoided the army, and you arrived to India. So it would be very beautiful to hear your first experience with Osho, the first time you saw Osho in person, and your first personal meeting with Osho.
When I went to Pune, to India, it was December 1980, and I went to India to go to Osho. Of course, I also traveled a little bit later. So I went to the ashram, and the first time that I saw Osho was maybe 2-3 days after I arrived. And it was Osho birthday, 11 December. So that was the first time in a discourse. Okay. And then I already asked for sannyas. So they gave the appointment. The date for the sannyas on the 13th of December. So I saw Osho first time, 11 December, his birthday. And then 2 days later, 13th of December, I took sannyas from Osho in Lao Tzu. And I always felt so lucky because very shortly after, I don't know when exactly, if 1 week later, 2 weeks later, anyway, Osho stopped giving sannyas, I mean, personally, from Osho. So I always felt like, oh, just in time. Yeah.
Okay.
And so my first individual personal meeting with Osho was in the occasion of taking sannyas, and that when Osho was giving the sannyas, you have a movement, let's say, together, no? Osho talk to you, and in that occasion, he just look at you, and he gives the name. He have the paper next to him, he just look at you, and he have the paper, and then he write the name, and then, of course, he gives, and tell, this is your new name, your sannyas name, and then he talk and explain the meaning and say a few things. So, although there were other people, of course, but can you imagine, I mean, that moment, the intimate moment, and it was just maybe 1 meter distance. Osho is sitting on his chair, and whoever were taking sannyas is just sitting, kneeling down in front of it, just like that. So that was the first.
You've been quite lucky first. To be one of the last people to take us directly from Osho. So, as I mentioned in the introduction, you traveled a lot in the East and came into contact with some of the teachings Osho talked about, such as Sufism, Zen, and Tibetan Buddhism.
Yeah.
And of course, that was an opportunity for you to go deeper into yourself and also into these teachings. You learned and you met masters of these different traditions. And today you offer a number of meditation experiences that combine these spiritual traditions. And I'd love to hear about that. And if you can talk about the most impactful teachings you have learned in these traditions and how they relate to Osho.
It's difficult to say the most strong one, let's say, because in themselves they are all extremely profound, and of course their impact is enormous in this sense. The first was Sufi, and actually I did the first Sufi group in Italy with the sannyasi, And so always in the world of Osho and in the context of Osho understanding, so is, and all this meeting, it has never been a deviation or, you know, something disconnected with my being with Osho and with my being an Osho disciple. So it has always been into this, absolutely, 100%, okay? I follow very much the Sufi path, again, into the understanding and vision of Osho. And then after few years, I was already traveling. Let's say my life has been always traveling for different reasons. Then I also went and meet quite meaningful, Gurdjieff would say, remarkable people, okay, in Turkey, in Afghanistan, in Central Asia. And I come in touch with very, very, very beautiful people, movement, and extremely profound and meaningful. And one of the reasons is because alive situation inside. Okay, so the strongest definitely in the Sufi world has been in Konya, where I go regularly since the last 20 years. And I have many friends there. And it was immensely, immensely surprising, very beautiful, very profound. And also, I immediately tell the people there, the friend there, I am Osho Sannyasin, this and that. You know? And there has been a great welcome for that. There has never been like, this is another story, or, you know, especially, let's say, with Sufi, because, of course, Sufi from the outside is associated with the Islamic world, which can be very, how to say, orthodox, rigid in that sense, you know, their vision. But of course, not much into the Sufi world. So also to see this, where the meeting was based on the living person, on the energy, on the feeling, on the heart communication, besides all the outer labels or belonging, or you are coming from this, you are coming from that, and so on. This was immensely beautiful to see and to experience. The other extremely profound encounter has been with the Tibetan, tradition. I always say that I always felt this very much in me. And if I wouldn't move for a long time as a method, I'm talking very much into the Sufi way as a method, always in Osho vision, definitely what was pulling me the strongest was the Tibetan tradition. Okay. So, and this was through a meeting with the Tibetan Lama, Rinpoche, in Taiwan. And this meeting also was such intense. And the most surprising things for me, totally unexpected, was that he proposed to me in our second meeting to teach me something, to give some initiation in certain kind of meditation, let's say, a certain kind of teaching of the Tibetan tradition, which it was a shock for me, because I was very interested into a certain meditation, okay, which is about, you know, the bardo, but I never even mentioned to him. I never talk about that. There was not the slightest hint about it. And when I was reading something about this, I was thinking, oh, this is something I would really like to learn. This is something so calling me, appealing me. At the same time, I also thought, knowing a little bit about the Tibetan, let's say, way tradition, I also thought, well, this is impossible, because you can access to something like this only if you have quite a background in this path, you know, and it's like you have to follow a certain preparation, a certain, you know, before you can be allowed to access to something like this. And just out of the blue, he told me, I want to teach you something. I say, beautiful. What? And he say, he mentioned that thing. I couldn't believe. I was like, what is happening here? And I meet this teacher, master, this is only the second time. And then I travel in Tibet many, many times. The thing, when talking about this, the thing I always point particularly is that all this meeting, all this encounter with certain path and people, teachers or master of those path, make me feel even more the love, the connection with Osho. Make me even a little more aware of the unfathomable depth of Osho, of his wisdom, of his compassion, that always amazed me, because all that those other paths may say is absolutely there into Osho teaching, Dharma, whatever we want to call it. And Osho, of course, express it and go into it with another language. And it make it much more available for, of course, the modern mind, let's say. So every encounter I have with a different path, let's say, tradition, ultimately there is only one Dharma, always. Okay? But, let's say, the method and so on, they can be different. So every encounter with other path make my love and my wonder and my, how to say, devotion for Osho even stronger and deeper. And it helped me also, certainly, I hope, on an individual level, but also to understand and to see, but this is what Osho was talking about here and there, you know, all the different things Osho talk, and make like, but this is the same. And the Zen, a little bit in Taiwan, Zen tradition, because in China everything is totally destroyed and disappear. Tibetan survive a little bit in extremely difficult and terrible situation, but there is a strong legacy outside Tibet, let's say, and Zen in China is practically almost non-existent, but it survived in a very beautiful, strong way in Taiwan. The Western people know Zen is associated very much, if not almost exclusively, with Japan, which is also true, of course. But everything in Japan is all coming from China. The Zen is coming from Chan, which is the Zen in China. Okay? And it survived in a beautiful and very authentic way, let's say, in Japan. A little bit in Hong Kong, but Hong Kong, of course, is very limited for the obvious reason. And in Taiwan, it could be preserved in a beautiful and authentic way.
Wonderful. Yes. In my small experience, I've lived in Singapore for a couple of years and I traveled to China. And what I've gathered is that in Taiwan, the Chinese culture is more preserved than in China itself, because all
Absolutely.
The people who fled from China during the revolution, they're very also proud of the fact that they consider themselves the real old Chinese.
Yes. Yeah. Because Taiwan is a totally free country, you know. Not many people know. They think it's China. It's not, luckily, until now. So it is independent since now 70 years after the Second World War. And so it's a totally free democratic country, and all this survive beautifully. A strong tradition are there.
Staying with the Tibetan Buddhism, in preparation of this interview, I was struck by a quote you mentioned in our email exchange, a quote from the Dalai Lama speaking to a sannyasi in relation to Osho. So you wrote in the email that the Dalai Lama said to the sannyasi, "You are very lucky because you are at the source." So, of course, I'd love you to comment on this quote, but I also would like to know if there is any record of this quote. And who was the sannyasi, and under which circumstances this has happened?
I am sorry for that. I cannot help, because this I read somewhere, but I cannot recall where. And I would like also to know, but I don't. I cannot recall from where. But what I can say more about this is that in other occasion, Dalai Lama talk about Osho, say in at least two or three occasions. Maybe you know, Dalai Lama went to Pune Ashram shortly after Osho left the body. He went. There are photos, Dalai Lama went to the ashram in Pune. Okay. One day, I think he visit, he met with a few people there. In another occasion, he say about Osho that he's doing a very particular work, and he is the only one who can do that particular work. This is a long time ago. Okay. Bridging East and West. And probably you know also that there is a very famous encounter interview with Osho Sannyasin, Swami Siddhartha, in 1972. He met the Lama Karmapa. Lama Karmapa is almost equivalent of Dalai Lama, okay? Three are the most important figure in Tibetan tradition: Dalai Lama, Lama Karmapa, and Panchen Lama. So, in 1972, do you know this? This interview is available, you know?
I'd love to you to tell it again. It's wonderful.
Yeah, okay. So, he traveled. I think his name was Govind Siddhartha. He traveled to Darjeeling in North India, and which was the headquarter of the Lama Karmapa, and he had a beautiful meeting with Lama Karmapa. And this is very easy. You can find very easy. I can send you the link. And the whole interview, Lama Karmapa talk so much about Osho, and saying indirectly that they know each other, and they know the work he's doing, and is totally perfect, and how he has been prepared to do this work, and say many, many beautiful things, even about Osho past life in Tibet, which Osho himself reconfirm later on, whatever the Lama Karmapa said. So there are quite a strong link, let's say, in that sense, direct, indirect. Often Osho speak about Tibet. He always speak in very, let's say, positive way, praising the Tibetan world, the Tibetan tradition, as you know, say for example, say about Tibet, how it is, it has been the only country in human history where all the energy were devoted to the inner exploration. How the monastery in Tibet, this is quite nice to know, the Zen monastery and the Tibetan monastery, they have not to be confused with the other monastery, this Osho say literally. You know how much Osho talk against monastery, monk, this and that, you know, and all that. But he says specifically, never confuse Tibetan and Zen monastery with the other monastery. On the contrary, they, in talking specifically about Tibet, when he says that the monastery in Tibet, they were simply laboratory of human consciousness. And Tibet has contributed to human consciousness evolution like nobody else. And it is a treasure of knowledge, let's call it in this way, about the inner, and the world will need them one day. That's what Osho literally say, and say many other things. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And then, I just remembered a famous quote from the Dalai Lama talking about Osho and acknowledging Osho as an enlightened master. And this quote is used in books, published books. So, I'm not aware of the exact circumstance under which Dalai Lama said this, if it was a public discourse, but the quote is used in books that are published, so it must be a reliable source for sure.
Yes. Me too. I don't know in which context he said that, but he said that. It's true. Yes, it is recorded somewhere.
The link between Osho and the Tibetan spiritual tradition is very strong and is fascinating, and perhaps is one of the few that we can have some knowledge and references, because obviously Osho spoke about so many different spiritual traditions, and as far as I understand, is because he has direct knowledge an experience of that. He probably has gained in past lives, but this is getting very esoteric. But when it comes to Tibet, we do have testimonies of this. So it's much more clear and evident. So perhaps you want to say something about Osho and Sufism, how Osho's understanding or view of Sufism differs, or perhaps doesn't differ, from the Sufism that you have encountered through your personal meetings with masters in Turkey and other parts of the world.
One thing, let's the starting point. In quite a few occasions, Osho say there are basically two paths, the path of love and the path of meditation, Sufi and Zen. Somewhere he says, if everything in the world disappear except these two, then nothing is lost. You know, literally, you say that. Okay? So, and he talk about this many times. There are, I think, at least six serious, full series of discourses dedicated to the Sufi, path. Okay? Commonly, the normal idea is that the Sufi means love. Now, one thing which is essential to know and to remember is that when Sufi talk about love, and when Osho talk about love, it's not the love that we know. It's not the love that we understand. Because all the idea and experience that we have about love is based on different degree, more or less, on the self. The self is the center. And the love that happen, the so-called love that happen, is one way or another, more or less, to fulfill, satisfy, or gratify some kind of need, consciously, unconsciously. Now, this is not love. This is something else in the name of love. Now, when Sufi talk about love, talk about a love which is a way to die, is a way to die to our ego, to ourself, is a way to dissolve ourself into the other, through the other. It's not a love based on the search, the need, the longing of some kind of satisfaction. It doesn't have expectation. It doesn't have demand of any kind. So this is the basic things. From this, we can move a little bit into that space. So the Sufi path, and Osho talk and explain this in so many ways, it is a path that through this love to die to ourselves, to die to the duality, to the separation. And for that, there are certain methods, for sure, but even more important than the method is this understanding that either there is a self or there is love. The two together cannot be. In a beautiful poem, Kabir, he says, "Narrow is the path of love. When I was, he was not. Now he is, and I am not." This is the very essence of the Sufi path, disappearing as a self, disappearing into the love, disappearing into the other. Certainly the Sufi path goes through the other, but it goes beyond that also. Now, in my personal experience, I met few people, few Sufi master, that they have integrated, realized that understanding in themselves. So there are, on individual level, people, human beings, who have certainly a huge, big, beautiful heart, and they live it. They are into it. They are not only talking about. And that's to encounter that, to feel that, and to be together, to be in that moment of union somehow, understanding, in that moment of love, in that moment of presence, which can be very expressive or can be totally silent, is quite amazing, is a blessing in itself. And in those moments, in those situations also, feeling, seeing even deeper the depth and the love and the compassion of Osho, the capacity to reach the modern humanity, the actual humanity, in a way where all these not just ancient but eternal insight can reach, can touch, can move our being, can move our heart.
Wonderful. As far as I understand, you also offer experiences where you combine the teachings that you have learned from Osho and all the other spiritual traditions. And I think that the Sufi tradition is the dominant one, if I am not wrong. And of course, now with COVID, it's all on hold. We can't travel. But normally you would offer live experiences where you share everything you have learned. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, okay. It's now about 30 years that I am offering workshop. And for a long, 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 long time has been Sufi. And since maybe 10 years or maybe a little more than 10 years or something like that, there is also the Zen workshop. Yes, some Zen workshop. And a combination of these two. This is another aspect, another, I call it, seed that Osho has given to his sannyasi. In quite many occasions, Osho talk, not talk about these two parts, the part of love and the part of meditation. You can call it Sufi and Zen. And, for example, answering to a question from Shunya, he talk about the possibility of bringing together these two. Although it's not easy, it is easier to follow only one part, but Osho literally say the possibility of bringing them together cannot be denied. And then he keeps saying, actually, this is what I am contributing to the world. And this is what I want from my sannyasi, to grow in love and to grow in meditation. So the possibility of bringing these two to move and to grow in these two can be there, can be there. Okay. So there is another kind of workshop, which I call Sufi Zen, bringing together somehow these two parts, these two visions, and create the condition, create the space for these two move together, going deep into the expression of love into the heart, and then from there move into the space of silence, into the space of just watching, just being a witness to whatever is happening in our consciousness.
Wow, that's fascinating to bridge the two paths that normally are considered to be either or, you know, the path of love, the path of meditation. So this is wonderful. It's a big challenge, but it seems like you're taking upon this big challenge of bridging Sufism and Zen, love and meditation. Amazing. So we are heading towards the end. I have three final questions I ask all the guests on the show.
Okay.
So the first one is, what is Osho's greatest contribution to the world?
Just being Osho. Yeah, just being Osho. We can list so many qualities, and quite many of them, they are unique, because to find a master like Osho, I think it's a little bit difficult, which can include all aspects of life, which never make a separation between the spiritual and the material, the sacred and the mundane, and so on, you know. Other masters have done that, sure, but the vastness and the clarity and the insight of Osho in every, virtually every aspect of just being a human, just being existence, is certainly unique, and his power is non-compromising at any cost, is a courage, is a stating the truth without caring at all of the consequence, and we know the consequence that he personally even went through. So that's immense. That's incalculable. I think always that there is not a clear perception, mostly, about the vastness and the depth of Osho. And like always, most probably, maybe after 100 years, 200 years, 300 years, then probably he will become like, you know, like another Buddha, like the historic Buddha, you know? And his capacity of to see, his capacity of penetration in whatever issue might taken into consideration is astonishing. And this always with the most profound wisdom and love and compassion. Compassion meaning the only intent, the only purpose is to do whatsoever to help the human being to awaken in a language, in a way which is understandable and receptive for the actual human condition, human mind.
Okay, so the second last question is, what is the most beautiful gift you received from Osho?
Osho. The love of Osho, the total acceptance, the simply his presence, simply to be so lucky that I met him and I feel his constant presence in my heart, and that most of my life since I was around 20 years old until now is in his energy, in his love, in his understanding. So in one word, if you ask me the most precious or important gift that I feel from Osho is Osho, his presence.
Beautiful. So the last question, you leave the Osho experiment. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today?
That's a complex question. Because I don't know, there are many experts. I don't know if you want to ask something particular, because to be with Osho today is like it has always been, to be with Osho. If we want to talk about the difficulties and the conflictuality, even in the Osho world, is another thing.
No. It's more personal. No, so, you were with Osho in the body. Now Osho is no more in the body, and you are on a journey. You know, what does it mean to you to be an Osho sannyasin today?
It simply means my life. This is my life. And it will be until the last moment. Probably after too. I'm not for sure. Not probably. Yeah, to me, Osho sannyasin today, I think the most fundamental is not much. I've never been much interested in to have a sense of belonging to this or to that, to organization, to whatever, okay? Because all these, what is Osho work, if we want to say, is bringing a transformation inside ourselves. It is a growing, it is a deepening of our understanding. So, if we want to find the meaning and purpose of all this, is our own spiritual growth. And the most important thing is to keep going, to moving in this direction. Do not forget and do everything necessary for that. That never forget that meditation is the priority, should be the priority in a life of a disciple. And everything else moves according to that. Of course, we have to arrange our living, our whatever, in society and all that comes with that. But meditation is the leading force. And whatever we do is to create the condition, the best condition for ourselves to stay. This is the inner core of, in my opinion, this is the inner core of being a disciple of a master, of a path. Everything else is secondary.
Beautiful. Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. And it's a wonderful way to end this conversation on this note, reminding that to be a sannyasin, to be a spiritual seeker, it's focused on meditation is the main thing, is our spiritual growth. So that's beautiful. And also I love this idea of bridging the two traditionally opposite paths of love and meditation. So wow, yeah, it's been a very fascinating talking to you, collecting your story as a sannyasin, as a seeker, and just chatting with you. Thank you so much for being part of the Lo Osho podcast, and I send you a big hug and lots of love.
Thank you very much for inviting.
Okay. Bye. Lots of love. Ciao.
Ciao.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.